Okay, you're good to go.
Okay, thanks a million, Sarah. So, welcome to our meeting this evening. As we know, this is a special council meeting that's been called in the aftermath of the devastating fire in the Mourns at the end of last month, but also to discuss the seasonal occurrence of these wildfires and what action can be taken by way of preventative measures. So hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. As we remain at unprecedented times, can I ask for everyone's full cooperation and to adhere to the guidelines with regards to the conduct of the meeting this evening? Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failing to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they may have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the meeting by hanging up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Please ensure if you wish to speak on an item, use the instant message facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed. Members should ensure their cameras are switched on when speaking, and cameras should also be on whenever a vote is being taken. So I'd remind members to keep their instant message to the following letters. Type Q if you want to ask a question, P if you wish to propose, and S if you wish to second. And please refrain from making any other comments using the instant messaging. If two councillors propose at the same time, the person who proposed first would be taken as the proposer, and the person who proposed second would be recorded as the seconder. Okay, so that's that spiel out of the way. So this evening we have Johnny Lynch and Patrick Clark of the National Trust, Martin Carey of Mourne Heritage Trust, and then we also have Mark Smith, Dermot Rooney, Nigel McGuffin and Martin Healy of the Northern Ireland Fire and Rescue Service on our call here this evening. So you're all very welcome to our virtual chamber. We as elected members greatly appreciate your time on the call here this evening. And I suppose just at the outset, I want to thank you all on behalf of Council for your reaction and service to the community. And not just on that one awful weekend we had in Newcastle, we fully appreciate the efforts that have gone into not just the Mourns, but the fires in Castlewell and Sleat-Gullion and the wider countryside across our district over the past number of years in terms of tackling those wildfires. As we know, we have so much beauty here on our doorstep, but with that comes significant management and environmental issues. I know many of us on this call have discussed the visitor management issues that continue to snowball over the past year in particular, and how as a collective we need to strive to deal with and ideally mitigate. So I suppose before we start, can I maybe take some apologies, Sarah? I know Hugh Gallagher had passed the apology on to me. Have you received any others?
Yeah, we have apologies from Councillor Dorn and Councillor Stokes as well, and there's a few there have just been put into the chat.
Okay, you happy to take a wee note of them, Sarah? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Thanks very much. I suppose the standard, do we have any declarations of interest?
None, Chair.
Okay, thank you. And then, okay, so in terms of our running orders...
Chairperson.
Sorry, yeah, who's that? Yeah. Councillor Enright, is that you?
Yes.
Yes, get over.
I think I might have a declaration of interest in the fact that I'm on the Fire Service Board.
Okay.
And involved in... with the Community of Police in Downpatrick on preventing wildfires as well.
Perfect. Thank you, Cadogan. Always safer to defer than not. Much appreciated. Thank you. Okay, so... yeah, in terms of running order, what I was hoping to do is bring in the National Trust, then the Mourne Heritage Trust, and then the Northern Ireland Fire and Rescue Service in that order, and ask you maybe folks to give a brief overview of how we arrived at where we are now, the issues that particular weekend, and also then what plans are hopefully afoot by way of preventative measures for the future here in the Mourns. After that, I'll take members in for questions, maybe a couple of members at a time, that hopefully then we can put to you guys to hopefully be able to answer, and then hopefully bring the meeting to a close. So hopefully you're all content with how the next hour or so will flow. So first up, we have the National Trust, Johnny as Assistant Director of Operations and Patrick, Countryside Manager. Nice to see you both again, albeit virtually. The floor is now yours to hopefully update us as members in terms of matters from the National Trust's perspective.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. I'd sent through a couple of slides. I'm wondering if they could. There we go. Thank you very much. That's helpful. As the Chair said, my name is Johnny Clark, Assistant Director Operations. Also on the call is Patrick Lynch, who's our Countryside Manager for the South Down portfolio within the National Trust. I'm just going to run through a few slides. Some of it is setting the scene, and then happy to take any questions. So that first slide, really setting out what happened, that devastating fire, and the of the area that was impacted, about 950 acres, about 540 acres are under the care of the National Trust. So it's a significant proportion of our land. Clearly, devastating impact on plants and wildlife. So the area is a vital habitat for ground nesting birds, newts, lizards, Irish hares, and it's and sadly we're identifying the remains of wildlife as we're looking at the area. Next slide, please. The next couple of slides are just really to help orientate us all to the area and the impact. So this first aerial photo shows the differentiation between an area that's clearly burned and an unburnt area. And just to orientate you, it's the A2 coast road that you see going towards Bloody Bridge in the top left, and Millstone Quarry in the centre of the picture. Next slide, please. Again, another next slide. Thank you. Again, another slide just showing the impact. To get I think it's worth just getting a measure of the scale of this. So again, another aerial photograph. This time looking at the eastern slopes of Slieve Donard, Comida, and the path along the Glen River. You can sort of see in the right of that image. Next slide, please. This next slide, thanks to our colleagues at the Environment Agency. This is a satellite photograph, which I think when you sort of get the scale of that, really is quite telling to show the extent of the burn. So you can see the peaks of Slieve Donard and Slieve Comida in the middle of that area, and the Glen River flowing into Donard Wood at the sort of centre top right of the image. And again, I know you'll probably hear from Northern Ireland Fire and Rescue Service as well, but in terms of that differentiation, sometimes because the fire met the wall or a particular river or damp area, I think just those images really helped to put the scale of what we've been through into perspective. Next slide, please. So, having orientated you, I thought I'd go through what we've already done. So we commissioned a drone survey of the affected areas. Those flights were completed last week, and we're just getting through some of the raw images from that. And so that's really to give us just more information on the exact extent, and actually to give us that level of detail so that we can go through the next steps. Another early action has been reviewing the grazing regime, and we've worked very well with our tenant farmer in partnership with him. So some of the immediate things we've done is to reduce the stock density on that part of the mountain to help it recover. And we're also looking at some technical solutions to keep lesser numbers of sheep in the right place and away from the area that's trying to recover. So that's everything from some of the technology on invisible fencing, or indeed GPS collars to tell us when they're drifting into the into the wrong area. So that's all about being responsible and helping the area recover. We've also initiated recruitment of two additional members of staff, so two more rangers. Those posts both went live this morning. If any of you would like to pass that on, so those are. Those are fixed term roles, just to give us the extra personnel to help in this recovery. The ranger team that are already there are also covering busy areas. You'll all be familiar with Murlough Nature Reserve, and there's all sorts of issues there, not just managing it, but dealing occasionally with antisocial behaviour. So what we didn't want to do was dilute that resource, which is why we're recruiting more posts. There's then really the analysing and working out those next steps. So there's lots of areas where we're not quite sure on how deep the burn is, and it's quite a specialist ecology specialism to work out the best mitigation measures. So we're working really closely with DERA, working closely with Martin and Mourne Heritage Trust, and indeed council to assess what's the next step to work out the extent of the damage to the environment, and what else we can do. What we're also working on is trying to share this as much as possible. If there's a positive, it really has brought the community and lots of organisations together in terms of working together. So we want to continue to tell that story and share progress, which is why I'm delighted to be invited to fora like this. And as the chair suggested at the start, there are lots of longer term plans. I'm not going to go into the detail of those now, but the fact that we're looking at things such as visitor management, Mourne's with a multi-agency approach is very positive. So I'll pause there if that's okay, Chair.
Yes, Johnny, thank you very much for that. And I think definitely some of the images you posted there are very stark. It's sort of hard to actually get your head around probably the extent of the damage that has been done, but I think those images are very much appreciated. Thank you. So are we content then to maybe move on? Would members like questions at the National Trust at this point? That might be handy. If anybody has any specific questions for Johnny or for Patrick, we'd maybe take those now before we move on to Mourne Heritage Trust. You're getting off lightly there, Johnny, this evening. We don't see any questions. Any questions for you? And I have to apologise as well. As Chair of Council, I've managed 12 months without have been in, nearly 12 months without being interrupted on a call. But quite literally, there, my 2-year-olds just after climbing into the office, I've managed to get her back out there again. So I missed a tiny bit of what you were saying there, Johnny, but definitely get the content and the drift of where we're going. Okay, so I think there's no questions appearing there in the chat. So maybe I'll move on then to Martin Carey from Mourne Heritage Trust, if that's okay. Martin, if you want to give a wee overview from your perspective, and then we can maybe take some questions from members after that. Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Chair, and thanks for the invite. Thanks to all members for giving this issue the attention that we think it warrants. I'm going to share my screen, if that's okay, and hopefully that will work.
Yeah, perfect.
I trust you can see that now. Are we seeing that okay?
Yep, that's you now, Martin. Okay.
Great. So by way of introduction, Johnny has set out what happened with this particular incident and the very prompt and thorough immediate response. I'm going to concentrate a bit more on a bigger picture where I think there's an additional piece of work to be done to address the issue of wildfires across the whole of the Mourne's, and also to give you an insight into the context that we have for doing that. The short version of that is to say, I think we have an awful lot of work that we can build on. The question is being able to resource it. So to show you what that means, that's the 2021 fire. I say I'm not going to dwell on it. I think that picture in particular, which we took from a drone, shows just how inaccessible this particular outbreak was. And again, to reiterate our thanks to all of the agencies who addressed that, particularly, of course, Fire and Rescue Service. But then to go back to the fire we've just had was the biggest in the Mourne since 2011, when there was a major spate of landscape fires across these islands, across Britain and Ireland. And that was Slieve Lammigan in the Anilong Valley, not far from where the ignition point was. many people have said it looked like a volcano. This is, while it's not a great photograph, this is broadly what that area would have looked like immediately before the fire. And that's what it looked like immediately afterwards. So ecological devastation, as there has been again recently, major disruption to tourism at that time, where businesses had to close for a number of days, and also a significant impact on water quality because of all that ash running into the water system, and incurring additional costs for treatment. So at that point, there was, as there has been this time, a strong multi-agency response. We established the Mourne Wildfire Group, which included the agencies you've got here, National Trust, Mourne Heritage Trust, Fire and Rescue Service, and also NI Water. And with funding from Fire and Rescue Service and NI Water and NIEA, we prepared the Eastern Mourne's Wildfire Report in 2012, which has guided a lot of work since, and I'll give you a bit of an insight into that. We also had a programme of training of key staff, both in MHT and Fire and Rescue Service, and the procurement of specialist equipment. One of those pieces you could see actually just under the number 4 on the far left of that pictures you look at it, which is an Argo Cat all-terrain vehicle, which belongs to MHT and is among some of the pieces of kit that we make available to Fire and Rescue Service. So the report basically looked at what were the conditions that gave rise to the worst wildfires in the Mourne. And from that, and this is just an example of one of the weather patterns that was identified, did some modelling around how fire was likely to spread at given points, from given points and in different conditions. This one happens to be the Bloody Bridge. And it's one of the regrets that, due to constraints of resources and the focus of this particular plan on protecting the water catchment, we weren't able to model right round to the front, the north face of Donard, which is where the current fire did occur. But with that analysis, we were able to identify strategic management areas in the landscape where, if we could control the vegetation, there was a greater chance of ensuring that if fires did start, that they could be contained. So from that then followed the specialist training. Ourselves and Fire and Rescue Service staff both went out to Catalonia to the Pau Costa Federation, which is one of the leading European practitioners in wildfire control, and then brought that knowledge back, and we established our wildfire control training area at Silent Valley. This is one of my colleagues, Matthew, giving some instruction on a controlled burn to a very mixed group, including some Fire and Rescue, but other agencies. And then with Fire and Rescue Service, we undertook some controlled burns at some of those management points in the landscape. This is one at the Bloody Bridge. And I'm going to try, if I can, to take you inside a controlled burn with a little bit of footage, which hopefully shows how, with the know-how that I have effectively, this is very an efficient way of removing what could be described as fuel load on critical areas. And then the next one, if I can show you, this is a time lapse.
We're seeing the same. Your audio is dipping in and out there. I'm not sure. Maybe that's just for me, from my computer, but you're dipping in and out there a wee bit.
Okay. I'll move a wee bit closer. How's that, Laura? Is that clear?
Yep. That, that seems to be better now. I think it might be the Wi-Fi, but yep, keep going there. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thanks, Laura, for that. Yeah, so this is a time-lapse photography of, again, the same control burn, ourselves and Fire and Rescue Service working together. you can see that being started. And then if I move it on, how it moves through a very significant area of gorse that had been identified as a major risk factor and hazard, again, in a very controlled way. Until eventually it's out. And then we come in behind. And what needs removed further then can be taken out by hand. And indeed some cutting is done beforehand as well on areas that aren't appropriate for the controlled burn. So that was back about 2013-14. We also then treated some of the other control points. This is one at Ben Crom. And important then is the follow-up management. So in that particular site, we introduced grazing with Galloway cattle, which meant that as the area recovered, the grasses were kept down and the heather heathland was allowed better to come through. So there have been successes from all that work. This was a fire at the Silent Valley in around about 2014. And I know Mark from Fire and Rescue Service will attest to the fact that some of the knowledge picked up in Catalonia and developed through the training helped to ensure that that fire didn't get beyond control. Of course, it was much more accessible than the recent one. This picture, I think, is not of the actual incident at Bloody Bridge in 2014. Sorry, it's the controlled burn again. But the point there was that when a fire did ignite there at, I think, 2018, the treatment that had been done to the management area meant that it was able to be contained. And again, we avoided what happened previously. This is Loch Shannon in 2020, where there was quite a significant fire just last summer. Wasn't as visible as the one we've just had, but was close to that in size. And again, the know-how that had been developed enabled a back burn, which controlled the fire there. And finally at Castlewellan, where the fire that got into the forest in the summer of 2020, again, the know-how, the equipment, the capacity developed did help to get that one under control. so it didn't develop as badly as it may have done. So just a few conclusions in terms of where that has left us and where we are now. There has been a very significant collaborative effort over a decade to prevent the incidence and spread of landscape fires. But a lack of continuity of resource has inevitably led to a lack of continuity of impact, particularly in respect of recovery. So in the early part of that decade, we were able to access reasonably significant resources, including from the Heritage Lottery, to implement the management plan. More laterally, we've found those resources more difficult to identify. And in particular, while we were able to implement a lot of the plan in terms of minimizing the extent of the wildfires, the resources for the type of recovery measures that Johnny's been talking about for the Donard site haven't traditionally been there. So there are other sites that need recovery measures. So in line with that, the successes have been most evident in prevention, but there's still much more to be done in that regard. I mentioned some of the areas that we weren't able to do the analysis and mapping on. But the good news is we have a considerable base to build on. The best practice knowledge based locally, the trialling of specialist techniques and equipment is as good as there is on this island in terms of the knowledge. But the wildfire plan needs updated, not least to take account of climate change impacts. And it also needs a strategic context in terms of a wider Northern Ireland wildfire strategy, which I know NIEA are working on, and a Mourne's Land Management Plan, as Johnny touched on, as well as coordinated public awareness. and the bottom line, the Mourne's Wildfire Group has been intermittently successful, but it needs resource support for continuous practical action, because it's only through that continuous unbroken effort that you get the maximum benefit. So say thank you for your attention to this important issue. Just leaving that shot of a cloud inversion, the head of Comet popping up above the clouds, that's the only sort of wafting of material we want to see around the High Mourns in future, not the smoke that we tragically saw those weeks ago. And that's me, Chair. Thank you again, everyone.
Thanks a million, Martin. Again, that really, really informative. Those images are so, so real in terms of what we can see there. Thank you for that. So we have a number of questions coming in here. Not sure if they're just all for you, Martin, or if we're going to spread them out, but we'll see how these go. The first one there was from Councillor Owen. I'll maybe take a couple of questions at one time. So, Catherine, if you want to go on ahead there.
Thank you very much, Chair. First of all, I just want to thank everyone. I'm not planning on coming in again, so in advance of the fire brief here, just want to thank everybody. It's been very interesting, the two presentations to date, and there's no doubt that the fire one will be as well. I'm just wondering if it would be yourself, Martin, that would be able to tell us how these fires are starting. I obviously know there's going to be a fire, there's going to be an investigation, but even just more broadly, there's obviously been several fires here. I'm fairly new onto the council, so I must admit, you know, I wouldn't totally be up to date with all the fires. You know, so is there a general consensus as to how they're starting and trends? And as a council, is there much more, is there anything more that we can do in order to try and help you manage this? Because, you know, our wildlife is hugely important to us, and the devastation, I could see it, I live in St. Field, and I could see this most recent fire from my bedroom window, you know, the perfect ring. So and I would be right at the very edge of Newry Morning Down, so I can only imagine the scale. So yeah, just those quick couple of questions would be great. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Catherine. Martin, what I might do is take in another couple of councillors if you might just see, much of that question is being maybe more from Fire and Rescue Service, but listen, let me see if we can take in a few more. Councillor McKee, you're in next there.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. In relation to the fire, obviously one of the things we've heard quite a bit of was, and possibly read about, the danger to wildlife, and there's maybe no figures put on that, what the loss of wildlife is. But just if you go back to controlled burning, Martin, is there a time of year that you can do controlled burning that has not a major impact, not only on the greater wildlife, which obviously maybe can fly, but the insect wildlife, Martin, is there a time of the year when they're not as prevalent as maybe at the time that this fire actually took place? Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Harold. And we'll take in Leanne, and then we can come back to the... Leanne, do you want to go on ahead there? Councillor McAvoy?
Yes, thank you, Laura. Mine's more of a comment, probably more than anything, so it is. And it was just really that I wanted to begin with acknowledging the heroic efforts from the Fire and Rescue Service in tackling the fire in the way they did. And to reiterate my thanks and the thanks of the people from across South Down and beyond to those men and women who have battled acres of blazing peatland with shovels in the heat and in a truly grueling location. And their efforts and the efforts of all those who helped in any way will not soon be forgotten by the people of South Down in the Mourns. And on Tuesday the 11th of May, as part of a Sinn Féin delegation led by Chris Hazarder MP, which included the Finance Minister Conor Murphy, along with some of my other colleagues who joined the National Trust to survey the damage caused by the devastating fire last month. And really just, I know there's a lot of work to be done and agencies to be brought together. And I'm delighted to hear that the Finance Minister, Conor Murphy, is following his visit to the Mourns, has pledged to make the necessary funding available to repair the damage. And we all know that we need expert conservationists and brought in to assess the damage, and that Minister Murphy has pledged that there will be no more looking down the back of the sofa for the pennies to protect our most precious environments. But throwing money at this will not be enough. We need a plan, and I'm calling on the Minister to establish the task force and a roundtable discussion immediately that will involve central government, local councils and the other various agencies, as well as the landowners, to put the necessary actions in place and do so urgently. So thank you, Laura.
Yep, thanks very much for that, Leanne. Okay, so a couple of questions there from Catherine and from Harold. I'm not sure, Martin, do you want to take some of those questions? I know we've got the Fire and Rescue Service coming next. That might be, are you happy to answer some of those questions for now?
Yeah, I'm happy to lead off. Chair, thank you very much, and thanks, members, for those questions. Yeah, I think Fire and Rescue Service is the best place to comment on causation, Catherine. I think the one thing we can say is they're started by people. You know, some folk have the notion around this idea of a bit of glass and sunshine, maybe in other places, but not here. The motivations for why people do it then differ. The big one I showed you that affected the Analong Valley in 2011, Fire and Rescue were able to pinpoint back to a campfire that simply got away. But ultimately, they're human fires. In terms of support, from council, I must and meant to actually in the presentation commend the speed and commitment of council's approach in convening a multi-agency meeting the week after the fire, and the biggest help that council has been and can continue to be is levering those significant resources that Leanne touched on from central government so that we can refresh the plan and get our wildfire plan up to date, and then look at where we need to target the resources for both prevention and recovery. And then, yes, in terms of controlled burning, it can only be done, there's a season after which it can't take place. So they're done best in February or early March. And an important thing is that when we do it, we very thoroughly inspect the site beforehand to make sure that there is no wildlife that will be impacted, that birds haven't nested early, and then work very closely with Fire and Rescue to ensure that it is confined to the target area. So in that period, it can be safely done. Possibly some impact on insects, although the view is that the wider benefit to the protection of the habitat is the greater good. And also, by removing the like of gorse and bracken and other invasive plants, that gives the heather a chance to come back. So actually, it's not just a wildfire protection measure. It can be, in the right circumstances, a habitat enhancement measure.
Thanks very much, Martin.
Okay, if we can move on a couple more questions. And Councillor McMurray, you're in next there.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Martin. Also, thank you for Martin for finishing on a nice picture of Slieve Comata. Really living up to its name there as the lookout there, peeking out over the clouds. And I suppose really, to some degree, I think the photographs do justice to the devastation's cause up there. As I went for a walk up from the back of Shannock Moor up into Glenfofney, and I actually don't think I was ready for how I was going to feel on witnessing it, because it truly is. It's such devastation up there. But listen, I suppose really I've got two, and also just this also to Mr. Clark as well. I was caught a bit cold there, Chair Devlin there, just when it came to questions. So, but I've thought of one now, or two rather. I suppose really the first one really was, at what stage do controlled burns, you know, serve their purpose, and actually then rethinking how we sort of replant and the flora up there as a management strategy. When does that kick in? You know, I mean, I know. That's not going anymore. But yeah, that's the one thing. And also, then you touched yourself and Mr. Clark touched on sort of the management issue really. And I suppose really my question is, you know, how well is the management, be it environmental, not so much environmental from your end, obviously, because, you know, you guys obviously put so much effort in it, but how much sort of generally is our environmental management as a society of these spaces working, as well as, you know, the management of how we interact with these spaces? So those are the two questions, really, sort of touching on there, both the sort of, yeah, the controlled burns and sort of the management issues. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Andy. I'll maybe take in the next two councillors and then go back again and see who can answer them. Councillor Andrews, you're in next there.
Thanks, Chair. More or less, maybe more of a comment than a question. Just first of all, I'd like to thank the presenters who have come along to this special council meeting tonight. And more, I must say, your slides and presentation and talks have been quite informative. And you know, I would like to wish you all the best for your endeavours, especially with the Mourns. You know, to me, those couple of days, the image that will always stick in my mind will be of the exhausted firefighter on the mountainside. You know, to me, that will always be my memory of those 2 days. You know, as I say, I'd just like a place in record my heartfelt appreciation to the emergency services and the volunteers who put in so many hours over those days, and particularly the local community for their kindness, for all the outlets in Newcastle who ferried food and everything up the mountainside to look after everybody. But again, tonight's meeting, it's been an excellent meeting. We've learned a lot from you, and again, wish you all the best. And you know, you always assure help and support from here where at all possible. But thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Terry. Councillor Savage.
Yes, Chair. First of all, just to echo the sentiments Terry and previous speakers have said, is really just to thank and put on record the fire service for the tremendous work that they did over what was a number of harrowing and very difficult days, but also the fact that the local community, business and other ways, and other stakeholders and statutory bodies came together in a real team effort to tackle this. You know, this is the jewel in our tourism crown. And, you know, maybe, Martin, you know, thanks to you and Jonathan for your presentations. I look forward to the fire service one. But, you know, we are in a position whereby COVID has now maybe created a bit of a problem for ourselves. We have seen numbers visiting the Mourns like no other in recent months. Certainly the good weather during the first lockdown seemed to spark that. And, you know, I think, you know, we have a job of education to do in relation to the fact that this is a very precious piece of real estate, and environmental heritage that we need to protect. And I think that we have a job to do as a council, and it's really how we can work as councillors, elected representatives, work as a council and work with all the statutory agencies to get the message out there how we protect this jewel in our crown and ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. Should it be working with the landowners and farmers close by, with people who visit the Mourns now in much greater numbers? You know, I think there is an onus for us to be aware of the work that goes in behind the scenes to protect this. I think that the presentation that you've given there, Martin, does give us an in-depth look at the work that goes on behind the scenes that nobody really sees to protect the Mourns to the scale that you do. But, you know, really what I was wanting to put across is, would you feel that we are at the stage now where we need to come together and maybe use the vehicle of the council as the platform on which to promote that education, and maybe over the summer months where we are looking at potentially bigger numbers using the Mourns and walking in them, that we, you know, we nurture that responsibility to look after this beautiful part of the world? Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Councillor Clark.
Thanks very much, Laura. Apologies, I got in late to the meeting. I had broadband problems. But I got the tail end of Martin's contribution, and I have to pay tribute to the Mourn House. I'm on the board of the Mourn House Trust, and I see the work that they do in regards to wildfires. A big credit to Matthew Busby as well, who, you know, led the way in regards to managing wildfires and preventing wildfires. So I want to put that on record. Again, as others have said in regards to, you know, the blue light services and also the forestry service and all the volunteers and the Mourn House Trust and National Trust, I'd like to thank all of them for their efforts. Out of a tragedy, there does come, you know, an opportunity, and I think we have an opportunity now. We do value our outdoor space a lot better, and appreciate what we have on our doorsteps, and I think COVID brought that reality home to us. So I was at the meeting with Minister Murphy, along with some of my colleagues, and we saw firsthand the damage and devastation that was carried out. And as somebody who worked in the Mourns most of my life and most of my adult life, with the Mourn House Trust and also the National Trust, in regards to, I worked in erosion control, you know, so I see firsthand the damage that can be done by a human. And I think we have to bear that in mind, regardless of who is responsible for the fire, that has to be contained. But we, it brings home that we need to manage it in a more collaborative fashion. And resources are a key to that. If we look at a similar type of, area of protection, if we look at across the water, Northumberland National Park, for example, is similar size. But the amount of resources they get is massive compared to what we get over in national parks. They get about, $4 or $5 million for similar size, and we get a lot less. So I think that brings it. It has brought us home the focus and the need to manage in a sustainable way our beauty spots. I brought a notice of motion some time ago in regards to environmental wardens. Coming from the council and working in collaboration with others. That is underway. We've had difficulties, and Laura knows we had a meeting early on. We've had difficulties in regards to recruitment. But going forward, I'd like to expand that to allow like a job scheme to get people, young people and long-term unemployed into the environment and enhancing what we have. So I think there's opportunities, as I say. Minister Murphy is committed. The resources once we get our recovery package into place. My question maybe is just who leads on that? So is it the council leads on that, or is it DERA, or is it National Trust or Moran Heritage Trust? So I think we get all the people, relevant people around the table, but it's who leads on that I think is important in moving forward. It's not just about the high moors, it's even before people get into the moorns, at our honey spots or whatever you call them, or hot spots. I think there does need to be greater management of the number of tourists we bring in, but also how we disperse them as well. So interested to hear how we bring this forward and who will be the lead. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Willie. I couldn't agree with you more there on some of the points that you've actually made there. Martin, I'm conscious all these questions are coming after your presentation. Now, if any of these aren't for you, we can bat them off until the Fire and Rescue Service come. But I know that Andy had a question regarding controlled burns, and obviously Willie's one was regarding who will take the lead. I think Michael Savage is also querying something that was sort of maybe similar to the Mourns Multi-Agency Task Force that we'd set up. But Martin, if you want to come in a couple of points there, and then I know we've got Cadogan and Henry, and then after that, then I'll bring in the Fire and Rescue Service, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Laura. Yes, Andy, in terms of the controlled burns, very much are only one part of an approach. They're the one that we were able to make most progress with on the previous Mourns wildfire plan. But other ways of controlling the vegetation or fuel load, if you want to use that term, have to be in there as well. Could be cutting, grazing is a key one, getting the grazing regime right. And then in terms of recovery, there are all sorts of approaches, including re-wetting, reseeding. So they really all need to be set out in our comprehensive prevention and recovery plan, and then taken forward as a mix, because no one intervention of itself will do the job. It's very much a mosaic of them. You'd gone on to then ask, Andy, I suppose, how we feel we're set up in terms of management of our landscapes generally. And I guess because we would have said for some time now, we think landscape management is a bit of a Cinderella area when it comes to public policy. Obviously, we have a non-statutory basis for our AONBs, and with that comes insecurity of resource. Mourne Heritage Trust obviously is a charity, where you look at other jurisdictions and you'll have guaranteed statutory funding for these types of landscapes. So I think in the bigger picture, that is something that we do need to address, which then brings me on to Michael's point on education. And Willie mentioned the initiative with the wardens, which I think is a really positive one from the council, that we'll have people at the key access routes to do the 4 E's. Engage, educate, encourage, and then if necessary enforce. But I know there's that council officers have been struggling to recruit to those posts, which I think, again, maybe proves that in the long term, what we need is more consistent management so that we're not just looking for people now and again. And in terms then of the role, both Michael and Willie touched on for council, for me, the key role is what it has done in terms of the wildfire issue and the visitor pressures, which is bringing the various agencies together. For me, council very much is the linchpin and has started to do that. We've tried in the past as MHT, but being a non-statutory charity, we're easily brushed off. Council has the legitimacy of you as elected reps and the statutory authority to really bring the relevant agencies together. So I'd be really keen to see council continue to take that lead role. And I think, Willie, as you asked who leads on this, for me it's the local authority. But council ought not to be expected to resource all this. The Mourns, as we've seen, are an asset to the whole of Northern Ireland and beyond. And it's not just people from this district that get the benefit of that. So that's where we need to focus the central government investment, I think, through the council. So I think hopefully that addresses the questions that were raised, Chair.
Yep, absolutely, Martin. Thank you. Thank you very much. Councillor Enright, you're in next there.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think the important note coming out of this meeting is interagency and the need for interagency work in this sort of area. I know that certainly in the Downpatrick area, hundreds of wildfires over successive summers, which ties down fire service tenders. I do recall two tenders being tied down in Downpatrick, so Ballinahinch and Newcastle and another station had to go down and put out fires in the dunes in Ballyhornan or the forest in Coney Island. There's an endemic sort of situation going on, and certainly there are a structured approach might help. I mean, for instance, every year we have trouble in between Knocknashinna and the Presbyterian Church in Downpatrick and Gallows Hill, perhaps a cutting back the grasses at a crucial time before the summer holidays, or particularly the Dunleith estate has huge amounts of land behind Ballymote, which are the scene of dozens of wildfires every summer. Similarly, along the Blind Horse Road, we have lands owned by the South Eastern Trust and by Jobs NI, who could be cut back. I'm sure the Fire Service representative will explain to us the cost of these hundreds of wild. We're talking about hundreds here. An interagency approach could identify the landowners where there are wildfires every single summer that tie down PSNI and fire service resources, and we could try and deal with them in a structured and organised way because we know where these places are. So could we build that in perhaps to a more broad interagency look at controlling wildfires in the council area, and possibly using our contacts with the local police and extending maybe our work in that area.
Thank you, Cadogan. Councillor Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very interesting discussion, and congratulations to Andy for bringing that about or proposing it. I wanted to ask Martin, you mentioned the Analong River Valley fire of 2011, I think it was. And after that fire, you're right, it was traced back to somebody having a barbecue in very, very dry conditions. And at that time, there was a significant number of people had indicated that if they could be given appropriate training or guidance, they would be prepared to act as volunteers, you know, as a quick reaction force if there was fires of that nature again. But because of insurance and different issues, that never come to fruition. But I was wondering, could the Fire Service, the Fire and Rescue Service, and maybe the Mourne Heritage Trust, with the council, give appropriate training and cover for that type of thing. Also, Martin, as Michael Savage pointed out, the numbers this year are just absolutely incredible. You know, it's staggering the number of people, and people are not really inappropriately prepared. And the dress that some of them, you know, people get up in sandals up the mountain. And we had the two fatalities in quick succession last year, I think it was. And, you know, we're always getting injuries up there. But would it be reasonable and sensible to have some sort of information board at the main access points to the mountains to tell people you can't have barbecues in forested areas, or you should wear appropriate clothing? Because that was actually pointed out to me after those two fatalities on the mountain, that that, you know, there is no information boards, and you can, you know, the areas where they could be located are nearly all in public ownership at present. So I would be grateful if you would take that into, give it serious consideration, Martin. But I think the volunteer aspect is really important, because there, you know, the people like myself who live in Warrens, born and bred here all our lives, we love the mountains and cherish them, treasure them. And, you know, there's a lot of people who would be prepared to help in those emergency situations. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Henry. I think, Andy, you're hoping to make a proposal there before the Fire and Rescue Service come in. Is that correct?
Yeah, Chair. No, I'm just sitting here listening to this, and it's very interesting. It's very, very illuminating. So it is. And, you know, I'm as much interested in what my other, you know, councillors have been contributing. You know, we've talked about the Jewel of the Crown. We've talked about, you know, the increase in numbers via COVID. We've talked about, you know, roundtable discussions with all interested parties, and we've talked about, you know, interagencies and who's taking the lead. And I would just actually just propose here and now that we have had successful conferences in the past regarding housing, regarding climate crises. I would make a proposal here now that we as a council take a lead in organising the conference in, you know, without saying the immediate future, but the not too distant future, just about how we manage and look after and engage with what is, you know, one of Northern Ireland, Ulster, Ireland's, you know, wild upland places, which, you know, really is an important, as we have seen through the sentiments this evening, a really important place to us all. So I'd make that proposal to her that we look in the not too distant future at organising a conference looking at environmental land and visitor management in our district. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Andy. Chair, with your proposal, I see in the chat box that Councillor Brown has seconded your proposal. So hopefully everybody is in agreement with that. If anybody's not, if they can maybe make themselves known, if that's the case, then we can obviously engage the officers then how best we take that forward. Andy, thank you for that. Councillor Riley, I know you asked one question there about volunteer training in terms of the fires and different things. That might be a question we can maybe put to the Fire and Rescue Service. I'm conscious that they're sitting very patiently waiting to present, and Martin's been in the spotlight there with a lot of questions. So maybe now, if we can maybe hand over to the Fire and Rescue Service. I know we've got Mark, Dermot, Nigel and Martin on the call this evening. I'm not sure who's going to take the lead there, but if I can hand over to yourselves.
Thank you, Chair. It's Dermot Dooney here. I'm the Area Commander for Southern Area Command. Mark isn't actually on the call tonight. It's myself, Martin Healy, who's the District Commander in Downpatrick District, and Nigel McGuffin, who's the station commander in Uri District, which is the other end of the council area. I'll try and share my screen here and get my presentation up.
Thank you, Dermot. Thank you.
Well, hopefully you can see that, can you?
Yes, I can indeed. Great.
Okay. Right, so obviously, I'll go through it there. That first slide is obviously that very dramatic photograph taken by a member of the public from down Main Street, and shows the devastation when it got over to the other side. I think that was taken on Friday night probably. So my presentation is going to focus really on the operational response to the incident and what was going on more widely in the organisation, the sort of challenges this presents to us And then, of course, the work that we're doing in partnership with the other stakeholders in terms of working around early planning and intervention and prevention of these incidents. So just a wee bit about the incident itself. We received the first call about a quarter to one in the morning on the 23rd of April. And the first appliance from Newcastle would have arrived there around 15 minutes later. We worked through the Friday and into the Saturday. And then on the Saturday morning, the Gold Incident Commander declared a major incident at just before 9 o'clock on the Saturday morning. Then working through into the next day, into the Sunday, as we know, by about a quarter past five, we were able to get a stop message in for the call, which basically means that we've got the fire under control. Just in terms of wider operational activity at the time, because we are focused not only on one incident, I guess, as you would be reassured, we're looking at the bigger picture as well, and we had about 525 calls on over the whole period that this incident was on. 219 of those would have been in Southern Area Command. And Southern Area Command, the geography of it is, it's basically all of Armagh and most of County Down, except the bits of County Down that fall into Belfast. So that's where we are. And we had 45 fires within the actual Mourns area itself. At any one time at the incident, we had about 12 fire engines, firefighting appliances, and the crews thereof engaged in firefighting. There was one command support unit. We had four of our Land Rovers there, and various supporting appliances and vehicles ranging from manual technicians resupplying equipment, things like that. And mostly during the incident, the maximum number of personnel we would have had committed to that incident is about 100 personnel, or in around 100 personnel, including dedicated wildfire officers and national tactical advisors on the subject of wildfire. So the supporting partner agencies, most people would be aware in terms of this incident and other incidents, are NIEA, the police, including our search and rescue team, and our search and rescue team, the Forest Service, Her Majesty's Coast Guard and the Irish Coast Guard, Erie Moore and Down Council, and the emergency planning links within that. Others include, obviously, Mourne Heritage Trust, the National Trust, Skywatch, who provide drone footage for us, Red Cross, and, of course, Mourne Mountain Rescue Team. And it was really good. There was a lot of good joint working through the JESA protocol, the Joint Emergency Services Protocol, using both the blue light services and the non-blue light services. And I know the staff who work for yourselves in relation to emergency planning are very high in the praise around the discussions and the stuff we've done through that. That just shows, that slide there shows what sort of activity we've had in the month of April in the last 5 years. And you can see quite a significant amount of resources in the month of April. And I suppose in an ordinary May, not this May because the weather has been a bit weird to say the least, but generally our big peak comes in April and May in the last number of years. And you can see the type of numbers of incidents and the type of draw these calls place on us across the organisation, across Northern Ireland. And that again shows across the other area commands, and our area command is highlighted in red there in relation to the type of demand there is for us in April across those 5 years from 2015 through to 2020. So the type of partnership working we're involved in, we're obviously involved in this stakeholder group and the stakeholder forum, the Mourns Wildfire Group, working with NIEA. We work with Forest Service in terms of pre-season planning and post-season debriefs, and we share our equipment, obviously share familiarisation sessions with each other around equipment, and we do the same with Mourne Heritage Trust, Police, NIEA, and of course Northern Ireland Water. And then, of course, we share information and resource sharing, as you would expect. We have a database and sharing around contacts, who's on duty, rotas, things like that, in terms of pre-season and post-season. In terms of the investigation, obviously the statutory responsibility for investigating this fire sits with police, and I wouldn't really be commenting on that, except I would agree with Martin in relation to what causes it, and it is very unlikely to be the bottle in the sun in our climate, it is most likely, and they all involve generally a person. And as Martin rightly says, the motivation for doing that is up for debate. There are various legal issues around it. Our responsibility is really around response to these incidents. It's about learning from them, and it's about working with others to try and prevent them happening. And of course, our other legal powers come from our powers of entry in terms of being able to enter other people's property to be able to extinguish them. There are various other pieces of legislation, for example, the Forestry Act, which prohibits burning close to forest, and close is termed in terms of about a mile, and people are supposed to seek permission from the Forest Service before they do that. I don't think very many people do. So there are various competing pieces of legislation, but the important thing in terms of investigation is that the investigation into it is the responsibility of the PSNI. Moving forward, obviously working with others in terms of the wildfire strategy, and pre-planning again, resource sharing, we're sharing a lot of resource, and Martin talked about the equipment. There's a lot of new equipment coming online, and hence enhanced education and landowner engagement. Obviously, all organisations are competing for budget at present. We are mostly trying, any prevention work we do is in relation to using our social media and early warnings about people camping and setting wildfires accidentally. And we know about the example in 2011, whenever we had the spate there as well. So, and also, as Martin talked earlier on about land management and the role of controlled burning and how prescribed burning is managed, and we are prepared to play our part in that. So in terms of positive outcomes, one of the earlier presenters talked about the positive outcomes from this, and the fire spread was limited thanks to good planning, good partnership working. And also it's important for us to put on record our thanks, and I know particularly in the meeting here with elected members, really appreciate on behalf of the Fire and Rescue Service and my area command in particular, the kind words of appreciation that were expressed for our work at this incident, but in the work that we do all the time, and community support is very, very important to us, and really, really grateful for that, ranging from the donations of food to drinking water to offers of all sorts of assistance, and of course we had the case of the young man who raised quite a significant amount of money with the GoFundMe page, and I have it in my to-do list to make contact with him, and we're going to do something with him in relation to thanking him more directly. I know he's had a letter from the chief, but we're going to try and arrange a visit to a fire station for him whenever that is appropriate. And just to know that Councillor Riley, I probably did it with it here, Councillor Riley talked earlier on about the volunteers and about using volunteers. I would caution, a word of caution around that, and it's not me being negative, but these incidents are very, very, very dangerous, and even with highly trained personnel, one of the biggest challenges we have is around the command and control of our people at these incidents, and that's difficult enough when we have people who are familiar with command and control systems. It would be a big, big challenge, let alone the health and safety and the legal issues around who would be responsible for who and how we would control people at an incident. But look, we're happy to look at that. We take a look at it. We do use volunteers in other areas in terms of prevention of fires, so we're happy to look at that, and I take that forward at my side and raise that at the appropriate forums within NIFRS. Just a couple of pictures here from the incident, and Nigel, who's on the call, has provided these to me. Sadly, we see on the left-hand side, the top of the picture, a red grouse looking for its nest, which sort of highlights the tragic outcome in terms of the wildlife here. And of course, in the bottom right hand side, we have the picture of firefighter Haley Agnew, which went viral. Haley is one of the firefighters in Kilkeel, and I think that picture sort of says and demonstrates the efforts that our people put into these calls. It really is hard work. So that pretty much concludes my slideshow. I'm happy to take any questions if anybody has any for me that I haven't covered. And of course, we have Martin and Nigel as well, so I might defer to them for some of the more complicated questions that anybody sends in my way.
Okay, Dermot, thank you so much for that. That was definitely a very good presentation. Sorry, can you hear me okay?
Yep, I can hear you.
Yeah, there seems to be an echo there. No, thanks very much. I know that first sort of photograph you put up there, Dermot, that was exactly what I could see from my window in Castlewell, and it was definitely very, very frightening. I think amount of resource that you've outlined there was very intense and at a huge cost. And when you think of that money, could obviously maybe be better spent in terms of preventative measures in the future, in terms of how we can deal with things going forward. You've also mentioned Charlie Thompson, who raised all of the money locally there. Charlie's also somebody that's getting a civic award from myself as chair of council towards the end of this week for his efforts in terms of that community. And you've also mentioned, Dermot, the community support, and that definitely is just testament to the respect that local people from locality and beyond that people have for the Fire and Rescue Service. So thank you for all that you do. And we've got a couple of questions coming in there. Let me see. Councillor McKee, be the first one in there, I think. Yeah, Harold.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Yes, and thanks, yeah. Dermot, for all your good work you've done. We appreciate all the work over the year, because this is not only, I know we had a big fire this year, but there's other years there's been lots of fires. And, at some time of the summertime, we do get fires and plenty of them, and firemen have to, and we always say about how they have to risk their lives in fighting fires in some very dangerous territory at night, and mountains are bad enough with rocks and what have you, and humps and hollows and holes and water and all that is out there, and it must be difficult to see. One of the questions that I would have heard umpteen times, and maybe a question for myself, and maybe Dermot, maybe watch too much television when we see fires in California or wherever, that there didn't appear to be any helicopters employed and lifting the water out of the sea, which was a stone throw away, and landed it on that dangerous territory of between the mountainous area and the forestry, which went right down to the wall, if you like, or down to the wire, and that didn't appear to be used. And the other question is, how do we intend, in the bigger picture, despite all the education that can be done and signage everywhere, who will do the work of maybe checking walkers? Are they carrying burnable products with them to create a fire, and who is going to stop them from lighting that fire? Because that would be my concern, because these walks and some of the people who would be lighting these picnics and that, what have you, they're out for a bit of enjoyment. They're not really out for that benefit of the walk, as a whole lot of people do, but they're out just to create a bit of fun for the night, and it doesn't work out and then they disappear. So basically that's two questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Harold. Dermot, if you're happy enough, I'll take in a couple of members first of all before I come back to you, if that's okay. Cadogan, you're in next there.
Thanks, and thanks for coming to make a presentation to us, Dermot. The thought of having an interagency approach, helping the fire service, helping the PSNI, and we know in Downpatrick every single year there's going to be a series of wildfires on the Dunleith lands behind the Ballymote estate. We also know that Invest NI has a fire every year along the Flying Horse Road, and sometimes involves South Eastern Trust land. And we also know that there's regularly a fire in Gallows Hill, which is council owned. I think it might be useful if we made a list of those areas that have wildfires every year, and sometimes several times a year, like in the case of Ballymote, and it ensured that the landowners kept them in a state where they were less likely to go on fire. Because I know that in the Downpatrick area, it's a huge issue, and it just ties up town so many fire tenders for such lengths of time. I'm wondering, is it something that Dermot could talk about, the number of wildfires we have in our area, and it's not just confined to the Mourns?
Thank you, Cadogan. Councillor McMurray?
No, thank you, Chair. Chair, it was just, I remember sort of watching, and thank you also just to the Fire Brigade, Fire Brigade, the Northern Ireland Fire and Rescue Service, for all the work that you guys did put in, a few, personally a few fire service people, so it's good to thank them, but thank you guys officially and pass that all on. But I was just wondering, it was reported in the press that this was, I can't remember the exact terminology, that the first time such a critical or major incident had been sort of declared by yourselves. I just wondered, was that the case? And also then just really, I suppose, really sort of following on from that is just, you know, the wildfire section of your service, and I think we're getting on the stage now where wildfire isn't the correct terminology, because as been pointed out, they're not wild, they're man-made fires that happen in wild, remote places. Is there like a ring fence, you know, funding for that section, or is there how does that compare? Is it something that's an ad hoc sort of thing, or just I'm just wondering, is there any more resources that could be diverted? Are you adequately resourced in that section? You know, I mean, obviously maybe getting a fleet of helicopters might be a wee bit by the by, but you know, I'm just sort of wondering, sort of, is that something that you guys need? I know other councillors have made reference to Minister Murphy about monies and all the rest of it. I'm just sort of wondering how that is affected by you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Andy, can I hand back to you, Dermot? There's a couple of questions there. I know one was from Harold initially about the helicopter and why that wasn't deployed at that time. I think Harold had also asked about sort of the role of which is really, Harold, that role that we're creating in terms of the rangers in tandem with the National Trust, that the enforcement officers doing that engage at the entrances to the mountains. I think there was also a question there from Cadogan as well. Dermot, if you're happy enough to pick some of those up.
Yeah, I'm happy enough to pick up Harold's question around the helicopters. Yeah, helicopter was requested. There are no resources in Northern Ireland that can provide, you know, a bucket, a helicopter and a bucket to lift water. That would have been ideal for us. We actually have to go through quite a complicated process of requesting a helicopter. We've used the Irish Air Corps helicopter before down in South Armagh, and this time we had actually got permission to use it from the Secretary of State. And he had given permission, but unfortunately in the day that it was in it, the conditions across the island of Ireland were ideal for wildfires, and there was a similar fire in the Killarney National Park. And unfortunately, they got the helicopter before we got it. But I would like to reassure you to say that we are doing a debrief, so we're carrying out a strategic debrief for this incident. And as part of that, we're going to look into a commercial solution in relation to the provision of a helicopter, because that is possible to do. But, I mean, to get a helicopter takes a period of time. We had time here, but by the time that the helicopter would have become available, we probably wouldn't have needed any more. As we know, we managed to get the fire out before that was required. But look, just to reassure you, we are looking, as part of our debrief, into a commercial provision and a contract arrangement around the use of a helicopter for water bombing purposes, for incidents such as this. In terms of the enforcement or the challenging of people around lighting these fires, I mean, obviously that's more of a role, probably more appropriate for the rule that was described earlier on about rangers or wardens. We wouldn't have the ability to be out and about and doing that sort of stuff. We do from time to time, we do, when budget permits, do some proactive stuff around fire watch when we know that we're going to have a period of dry weather, whatever. We will sometimes crew up our Land Rovers in the Newcastle or Kilkeel area. We would crew up crews and have them out, keeping an eye out as a term of an early warning. But really, we don't have the resources to be able to do that. In terms of Cadogan's question around Downpatrick, probably more for Marty to answer, but just to reassure him that we do a lot of work in terms of community safety around prevention of those fires. In terms of enforcing people keeping their land tidy, or especially any of the statutory agents around that, we don't really have the power to do that. The only time our powers would come into managing fire risk and around that would be if for example, a big area of wildfire was coming close to the perimeter of a building. But our powers would be very limited, other than the powers of persuasion to get landowners to clean up their land. I'll come back to Marty, if that's okay, Chair, to maybe give Cadogan a wee bit of an insight into the sort of work that he and his crews would be doing in Downpatrick around that. In terms of Andrew's question about the major incident, I referred earlier on to the Jessup principles, and the Jessup principles are quite new and only really becoming embedded. And you're right to suggest that this is probably the first time that we've declared a major incident in terms of an incident like this. I think we'll probably do that more often, because it does a lot in terms of bringing other agencies together, and it focuses the minds of the public and it opens up a few doors for us in relation to, for example, the provision of use of helicopters. So it is something we'll probably be doing more of when we get incidents like this. I would like to reassure you and tell you that, you know, not to pour water, pardon the pun, on the size of this incident or the damage that was done, we were still able to carry out our function, our statutory function in relation to response. I was the strategic commander for the organisation for that day as a duty area commander, and my focus at headquarters that day would have been in providing business as usual service across our district, but also across the whole of Northern Ireland in terms of business continuity and still being able to turn out to fires and road traffic collisions, all the things that we got on that day as well as this incident. So be assured, yes, we declared a major incident, but this incident wouldn't particularly stretch us in terms of affecting our business continuity. And we have escalation we can do in terms of bringing people in on overtime, etc., in terms of crewing up if we needed to. Funding for wildfire. We are funded in terms of our statutory funding to provide a fire and rescue service. We have a small number of officers trained up who are specialists in wildfire. We have some capital for equipment, specific equipment. You saw some of the news shared with Martin's presentation earlier on around wildfire and prescribed burning and stuff. We use ordinary firefighting response for this. So we don't have dedicated teams of people dedicated just to respond to wildfire. We use our normal operational response. And for an incident like this, for example, if we were tonight to mobilise 6 pumps in the Mourns area from say Kilkee, Newcastle and Refrain Island, we will make supporting arrangements to replace those no stations by standby move. So in short, we don't have dedicated resources to wildfire. All of our firefighters are trained on how to operate in that type of terrain and are trained in command and control and the wildfire standard operating procedures. Hopefully that answers all the questions.
Thanks a lot. Dermot and Martin, you were hoping to come in there.
Yeah, sure. Just to answer Ryan's question, we are dealing with stuff within the Down Patrick District and
Martin, I think you're, sorry, Martin, your connection must be really bad there, is it? Maybe the Wi-Fi. Do you want to maybe even try turning the camera off? It's just, I'm not sure if that's just me picking that up. It seems to be very garbled.
Yes, sure. Can you hear me now?
It's a wee bit better.
And just to answer some of Councillor Henry's concerns, we're dealing with the PCRP, Anti-Social Behaviour Group, and dealing with this issues in around the public area, especially with regards to wildfires, as we have had a lot of incidents in and around that. But there's ongoing work with Youth Justice and some other agencies and community groups to try to deal with the fires in and around the estates, etc.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Martin. It was broken up there, but I appreciate that contribution. Hopefully Cadogan got that and everybody else. Thanks so much. I think, Terry, you wanted to come in there with a comment before we hopefully go to conclude.
Yes, Terry, thanks. I take aboard a lot of contributions from the previous councillors. But again, I would like to thank the Fire Service. That's, another interesting presentation tonight. We've learned a lot from you and how you operate, and you know, facing a lot of difficult trying circumstances. But again, it's a job well done, and you're all good and committed. And especially, let's say, and thanks for sharing your photographs. And especially with the volunteer from Kilkeel, to me, it's, you know, that picture will always be in my mind. You know what I mean? It just sums up. And makes people aware of the physical endurance and a lot of difficulties that the whole team faced that over those days. But again, you do a good job, and thanks again for coming along this evening to share and give us an insight into your operations. But you do a good job along with everybody else tonight who have come along.
Thank you, Terry. Karen, you just about got in there before I called things to a close. Councillor McKevitt, you go on ahead there.
Thanks very much, and apologies for being late. I got tied up at a different meeting. But just to highlight again with other councillors, and rather than repeating all like the invaluable service that you give to our whole community is second to none, and it always has been, and very, very supportive of yourselves. Delighted that Laura and Dermot has recognised Charlie Thompson and what he has done. I think it's very, very important for all public bodies like yourselves to, you know, when somebody steps up to the mark that they're recognised. I'm not saying everybody, it needs to happen to everybody, but when it happens in such a time when you're in the headlines for, well, the Mourns were in the headlines for all the wrong reasons and the fire service for all the right reasons and the response to it and all the rest, that the community do that. So I'm absolutely delighted with that and to keep that up. Just something, Dermot, I did notice in your presentation was the month of April and the increase that has been, particularly in 2020, on a few of your slides. Could you give us an insight just to the reasoning you think why this is happening? But, you know, to jump from something like 248 right up to nearly 1,000 is massive, massive jump. And maybe if you could give us an understanding as to why that's happening and what you think, why you think that's happening. Just, you know, maybe we could do something as a council to be able to highlight things at a certain time of year, particularly when around Halloween and all of that, that, you know, you do tend to at least give a wee bit more advice out when you expect things, you know. So is there anything we could be doing as well as a council to help the like of the fire and rescue service in highlighting stuff? Do you think is there enough been done? Because, like, I know in schools and that, these are very proactive, and I hope that keeps up. But just that month of April increase, it's a definitely a warning sign to myself, and I would like to know maybe just your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Are you happy to take that one now, Dermot?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, look, thanks very much for the kind comments. We're being overrun with kind comments, but they're very welcome, and I'll certainly pass them on to my crews. I've already written to them, the stations involved in this incident, to thank them, and I mean, I'll give you an undertaking tonight that I'll do the same again to pass on the grateful thanks of the councillors. Yeah, in terms of the April, Karen, it's probably quite simple. It's really down to weather. And as I said earlier on in my presentation, normally we get a spike in around April, May time. May has been, I'll not say the Q word, but it has been less busy than it normally would be for us because the weather has been so wet. I think at this time of the year, you can get, you know, the frosts, the white grass underneath, the place can be tinder dry. It can depend on what direction the wind is coming from. There are wildfire prediction systems that you can use. We were aware that there was this was a danger. We had been messaging that week in terms of social media, warning people at risk of wildfire. And, you know, I suppose if the council is going to do anything, it's very similar to the work we do around flooding, where we have an agreement, multi-agency agreement, where we really share each other's messages. And I suppose if council were going to do anything, they would be looking out for our social media messaging around the risk of wildfire and sharing that on their social media channels, because obviously everything's gone now towards messaging using those forums rather than advertising or TV advertising. So yeah, I suppose the amount of statistics we keep, it's easy to plan for these things. We know there's a wildfire season this early in the year. If it gets dry again, we'll know again. So we do things to put in preparation. So really it's about messaging. It's about being ready. We have a high state of readiness at all times, but it's about horizon scanning and seeing what's coming up in relation to the weather. And we do all that just to reassure you.
That's great, Dermot. Thank you. Thank you so much. So I suppose that's bringing us towards a conclusion this evening. So I suppose a massive thank you to you all for attending this evening. I definitely found it really informative, and it's very clear that we just need that long-term strategy and funding, long-term funding. We have a huge issue here on our doorstep, and one that is exacerbated by many right across the island who come to enjoy the beauty of the outdoors. We want that to continue, but it has to be sustainable. As we've all discussed here this evening, our environment is so incredibly precious. So let's all politically here this evening and beyond continue to lobby for that long-term funding model for the Mourns. The time is long past for the piecemeal type approach to the Mourns which we've seen so far. When we look alone at the money and the resource that was indicated this evening that's spent fighting these fires, never mind the damage to the environment and worryingly the risk to life and property, the time has now passed. So let's hope in these weeks and months ahead we see that tangible plan that will ultimately save the Mourns and our stunning landscape. So thank you all, but I've been warned before we conclude that Marie has to come in at the very end. Marie, I can hand over to you just before we finish up there. I didn't forget, yeah. You see.
Thank you very much, Laura. And just Just to say a huge thank you to the various agencies. We are working together at officer level, and hopefully we'll be able to pull off some of the stuff that has been discussed tonight. So just in line with the current legislative uncertainty around remote meetings and the restrictions on indoor gatherings, I as Chief Executive have agreed to exercise my delegated authority under standing orders to implement the resolution of the Council, subject to any conflict of interest or legal advice that the decision is unlawful. So thank you very much, Chair. You're on mute, Laura. There's always one.
You would think after nearly 12 months that I would have learned, wouldn't I? 12 months of remote meetings. Okay, folks, thanks so much to everybody, and she will see you all soon. If you're not at home, safe home. Take care.
Thanks, Emily. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks all. Much appreciated.